I got 20 weeks to cover Proverbs. Found out later I got 9 weeks, okay? In case you're wondering, there are 915 verses in Proverbs. We've only got to cover 91 verses. 91 verses a week. We'll be able to cover every verse in Proverbs. That's one verse every 2 minutes. That's about how we got to go to do that. We're not going to study Proverbs that way, and so the title of this study is an overview. It's not a total overview because we're really going to focus in. Two ways to study the Bible. One's a bird's eye view. You back away, you look at it in the big picture. The other, and I may have made up this expression, maybe I read it from somebody else, but it sure stuck in my head, is a worm's eye view. and you just got to get in and look at every word and every part of every word. Look at the bulletin article this week about that letter S. I thought that was an amazing thing. And this, not that it was a great article, but it's an amazing truth that is found inside that article and the things that are there. What do you know about Proverbs? Well, let me ask you, what is a proverb? How would you define a proverb? A story? Okay. Not necessarily, but not a long one. Not a long one, right? What else? How would you define a proverb?
A wise saying.
A wise saying, okay. And so I did a lot of study, looked up, learned a lot of new words, big words. It's a maxim. You ever heard of that? It is a maxim. It's a pithy statement. And I bet you haven't used that word in ages, you know. That's a word that I knew, obviously, when I read. I knew maxim also, but I... In the center of a plant, you take a plant and you open it up, and right in the center of the plant is the good stuff. It's the goop that makes the plant live, and that's called the pith, P-I-T-H. That's what a proverb is. It's the pith of wisdom, and so that will help us. The words are oftentimes words are oftentimes figurative, and obviously it's a poetical thing. I mean, we've been studying Psalms together, and so it's poetical, different from Psalms, and yet it is filled with a lot of things. Now the terrible thing about Proverbs, and I don't mean this, and it's not being critical the way God put it together, because Proverbs is like my mind. It just jumps from one topic to another. I love reading Proverbs and everything. But there's very little continuity in the book. You'll read over here and there'll be this verse about of instructions to fathers. And here's this verse, instructions to children. And all the way through the book, it just jumps from topic to topic. And so our study, once we get past this introductory lesson, is going to do that. We're just going to take topics and look through the book of Proverbs, and hopefully that our pith will be enlarged. Is that, I don't mean that literally, but what the core of who we are will be changed. That's why we tried to do with Psalms, tried to get some meditating on the law of the Lord. What I want us to do with Proverbs is to change the way we think, the way we view. Well, I've got some 13 topics, and we've got eight more weeks in this semester, and so there's no way we'll be able to cover all of them. And I've just started, and I've got 13. If that makes sense. And so, which of these we'll be studying? I'm not sure. Some are humorous. Look at chapter 11, Proverbs 11, 22. Somebody read that. Read it out loud too. It probably would help. And so I put the word humorous, and I just want to make sure we read this proverb, okay? Proverbs 11:22. What does it say? Read it.
As a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion.
I thought it was ironic this week on Facebook. It showed a young lady with a nose ring. It's already you can have a nose ring if you want to. It looks like, at least to King James, when they came out of Egypt, they came out with nose rings. They donated the King James. They donated their nose rings to build the tabernacle. But anyway, it and the picture was of a girl has a nose ring, and right beside it was a big fat hog, and it had a nose ring in it, you know. And obviously, I'd read this verse, and I thought that was pretty interesting. Look at chapter 25, verse 24. And sometimes my fingers don't type what I read, so I hope I've got all the right verses down here. 25:24. What does that say? Yes. Read it out loud. Whoever's got it. Better to dwell in the corner of a house. Is that humorous? Well, not necessarily, but there is humor to be found in that. I'm not going to identify who that is, but a former member of this church, if I called him by name, you probably would know, he said, the reason when my wife starts talking, I don't answer her is, it just gives her more ammunition. And that's what this says. Better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious woman. And 27:15, chapter 27, verse 15, yes. And I didn't mean chauvinistic in these verses. I was just looking through some of the verses, everything. Somebody read that. Got it? Who's got it? Read it out loud.
A continual dropping in a very rainy day, and the contentious woman are alike.
Okay. I don't know if that's interesting to you. You have ever had a dripping faucet? That's the kind of thing. But you can imagine living in the kind of houses they lived in, or tents, or whatever they had. And it's a very rainy day, not just rainy day, but a very rainy day. And it just drip, 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 drip. And he said, "Where have I heard that?" And then that becomes one of the Proverbs. Now, the book of Proverbs is primarily written by Solomon. If you're still in chapter 27, look back in chapter 25 in verse 1. Chapter 25 and in verse 1, I'll read this one. 25:1. These also are proverbs of Solomon. And then this parenthesis, and you may not hear this, proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. Isn't that amazing? And so, where's Hezekiah fit in the Bible? Where does Hezekiah fit in the Bible? Well, he's obviously a descendant after Solomon. So you got Solomon, then you got the divided kingdom, and you've got the divided kingdom, what, about 930 B.C.? And Hezekiah is reigning when the northern kingdom is destroyed. Anybody know the approximate date of when the northern kingdom was destroyed? Anybody? You got a chronological line in your brain? I've got one of those. It's really helped me peg things. 722 B.C. is when it was. Just 200 years afterwards. And so in the days of Hezekiah, someone who worked with King Hezekiah copied other Proverbs of Solomon. Copied other Proverbs of Solomon. And I think chapter 10 in verse 1 says that these are the Proverbs of Solomon. And chapter 1, verse 1 obviously said these are the Proverbs of Solomon. Well, who wrote the book of Proverbs? We always answer Solomon. And that part of it is right. We'll talk about that a little bit more. Look in 1 Kings chapter 4. Get out of and go back to the time when Solomon lived on this earth. 1 Kings chapter 4 talks about some of the many things that Solomon accomplished. And it's actually really an amazing chapter to read, amazing section of the Bible, because it talks about all the wisdom that he had. Verse 29 says, God gave Solomon wisdom, exceeding great wisdom, and largeness of heart like the sand on the seashore. For he was wiser than all men. That's in verse 31. You see that? 1 Kings 4:31. And then lists some people that he's wiser than. And his fame went into all the surrounding. And he spoke, and here's interesting, how many proverbs did Solomon speak? 3,000. How many verses are there in Proverbs? You go ahead and put that next slide up, and somebody will look real smart, because I won't even notice, 915 verses. We don't have all the wisdom of Solomon. And so he spoke about a whole lot of other topics. Now then, That doesn't mean that we do not have access in biblical truth to the wisdom that he gave. You know, because Paul wrote other books of the Bible that we don't have copies of, but the copies that we have, all scriptures given by inspiration of God, and it thoroughly supplies us. So the wisdom of Solomon, of these other 2,000 Proverbs, is not something that's been lost. We just don't know what the Proverbs are. The wisdom of them, not necessarily the verbiage, but the wisdom of them is to be found in the Bible, so we do not have all thousand. Now then, don't put the next slide up. Any idea how many verses there are in the Bible? 31,000 what? Okay. All right. Here's one for you, Chuck. How many words are there in the Bible? Go ahead and put the next slide up. This is my mind when I'm outlining this, okay? I thought, well, this is how many verses are there in Proverbs? So I Google it, you know, so I knew somebody would have counted how many verses there are. And I got over there and it told how many words they are. And then it did then had a listing of every book in the Bible, how many verses, how many in each book in the Bible, and then how many words are there? And that's if you're going to read the Bible through this year, you've got to read 778,000 or whatever that number is of words that there are in the Bible. And by the way, that is not on the final test to get into heaven. You know, you don't have to remember that. But my mind just when I got over there, I just had to know. Yes, sir. Isn't that something? I don't know. All of you could not hear what Joyce was saying. But she says there are 31 chapters in the book of Proverbs. How many days in a month? And she's doing what I heard some other individual says. If you want to change your life, read every month. Read five Psalms, five chapters in Psalms, and one chapter in Proverbs. What a discipline that would be. And Proverbs, the trouble in Proverbs is in one chapter there might be six things you really want to remember. And so, but I'd encourage you seriously to underline in Proverbs those verses that really mean a lot to you, because it'll help you the next time you're just, well, I think I'll read the Bible, and you look over there, wow, you know, that is really, really good. But Joyce, that's a good practice. That is a good practice. Now, I do not recommend what Robert Taylor did, and you might, you don't know him. I don't know if we've ever had Robert speak here. He's now deceased, but he did a lot of preaching, a lot of writing and everything. I don't know if you know the name at all. But every year he memorized, he made sure he could quote Psalms 119. And so he took a part of every year and refreshed so that he could quote all of Psalms 176 verses from Psalms 119. I don't recommend that, because I don't think you're that smart. And so, no, you might be in everything. That's another way of doing it. And there's all different ways of reading the Bible and everything. Johnny Ramsey had as wide a knowledge of the Bible as anybody I know. And I said, Johnny, how do you study the Bible? He said, I'm not going to tell you. I said, come on now, Johnny. John was 10 years older than me. He really impacted a large part of my life. In a sermon, he'd have somewhere between 75 and 100 verses. We had him preach when we were on 36th Street. He preached here at least in two meetings and everything. And he's like a submachine gun, a Gatling gun when he got up to preach. And it's just not one verse after another, but he could weave those things together beautifully. I said, Johnny, tell me. He said, I'm not going to tell you. And he said, finally, he told me, and what he described is the very thing that happens to me when I get to start studying. I'm going to study the book of Proverbs. I get a piece of legal paper, you know, and now I get to Microsoft Word and everything, and I write a study of Proverbs, chapter 1, verse 1. And so I read chapter 1, verse 1, make my notes about it, and in chapter 1, verse 1, I think, wow, that's interesting. And so I think, I believe that's said over here in 2 Peter. And I'll go over to 2 Peter, and I get to 2 Peter, and then I find something in 3 John, and then I'm in the book of Exodus, and then I'm headed over to Proverbs, and then I'm headed over to another book. And 45 minutes later, I've got Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1. I've studied 45 minutes, and never studied Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1. That's the way Johnny studied the Bible, and I'm not nearly as smart as Johnny, don't know the Bible like he did. That's the way my mind works. I mean, it just jumps topically, not topically, but it gets interested in something and just chases it all the way through the Bible. It's a sort of a chain reference kind of a way of studying the Bible, and I don't recommend it. I really, really do not recommend it. I hate people whose minds are as disciplined as David Sproul. I stand in awe of that guy's mind and his ability to grasp the big picture. And I'm not him, and I know he's thankful he's not me. But anyway, let's get back to the topic. See, I headed out in the left field here, chasing that rabbit all the way through 2 Peter and Proverbs. Anyway, Solomon asked for wisdom. Are you still in 1 Kings chapter 4? Well, you remember the queen of the south, Queen of Sheba? Evidently, Arabia. Over in Persia, when Solomon is on the throne, over in Persia, there is this queen of the south. And I've got chapter 4 as the listing of her coming, and I don't see it in here. I've got the wrong reference in here. I didn't double check all of these references, and I knew I'd get in trouble here somewhere. But the queen of the south came to behold the wisdom of Solomon. If anybody can find her, let me know. It may be in the latter part of 6. I can't remember. Chapter what?
You'd find? Chuck told you.
What chapter?
Chuck told you. Chuck, yeah.
Chuck will know it. Where is it, Chuck?
1 Kings 10:7.
1 Kings chapter 10, verse 7. Okay. See, I hate those minds. You know. Some people have a head like a tar bucket. You know, it's in a bucket of tar. Anything touches it, sticks to it. I don't know if you ever worked with tar or not. But chapter 10, verse 7 is where the queen of Sheba heard of the wisdom of Solomon. And in chapter 7, she says, I did not believe the words until I came and saw with my own eyes. And indeed, the half was not told me. Your wisdom and prosperity exceeds the fame of all that I had heard. Isn't that amazing? That's how wise he was. And as a youth, he's a young man. His father David dies. He becomes king. And instead of asking God for riches or for fame or for power, he says, God, paraphrase, I'm scared to death about the responsibility that I have. Ever been in that situation? You know, I mean, you got a child and you're worried how that child's going to turn out. You know, you're in a situation trying to deal with family problems, trying to deal with problems at work, and you hardly know which way to turn. That's where Solomon was. Can you imagine? David was unbelievably powerful, a great warrior. Nobody stood against him. And now all of a sudden he's inherited from David this great, great kingdom. And he says, Dan's paraphrase, I'm scared to death. So he asks God, give me wisdom. And God says, because you've not asked for riches and fame, I'll give you all of this, but I'm going to give you wisdom. And so we generally talk about Solomon being the wisest man on the earth. And for sure that was true whenever he lived on this earth. And I still, in my head, have Solomon the wise man in my little box that I've got Solomon in inside my head. And I know Jesus was wiser than Solomon. But a way I remember Samson, he's the strong man, and here's the wise man in the Bible, and that is Solomon. And so Solomon asked that God would give him wisdom. I want to show you a couple of things here. We'll just look at it because this is under the section written by Solomon. Look in chapter 22, Proverbs chapter 22, verse 17. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 17, I think it is. Incline your ears and hear the words of the wise and apply your heart to my knowledge. That's chapter 22 and verse 17. And I wrote down chapter 24, verse 23, but I think it may be 23:24. Look at 23:24 if it's there, and see if it's there. Nope. Anyway, somewhere in chapter 24 it says, the words of wisdom, the words of the wise. And so some individuals, as they talk about the authorship of Proverbs, have gone there and said, well, that's somebody else. That is somebody else. And so there are, if this is one gathering of wisdom, in my mind, is it possible that Solomon gathered this wisdom of the wise in his day and says, that's wise, I'm going to write it down. But when I read that and thought about that, I don't know that I ever heard that. But then he said, hear my knowledge. And the word my in that verse to me just sort of negates everything that I just said for the last five or six sentences. And so that doesn't bother me at all. But look in chapter 30. Look in chapter 30, verse 1. When you get to the end of the book of Proverbs, there is this statement. The words of Agur, the son of Jakel, his utterance, this man declared to Ithiel, and to Ukal. And so chapter 30 evidently is the writing of Agur. You want me to tell you who Agur is? I don't know. You want to Google it? Go for it. Nobody knows. Nobody knows who this guy is. But look in chapter 23, chapter 31, or if you're in 30, look in chapter 31. The words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him. That's interesting. Now, who is this guy? Well, you may have another translation. It gives a geographical location. They tried, I think they took the word king and made it, forgot the name of that place, and some of the more modern translations gives a geographical place, king of such and such a place. But that's the rarity. The translation is, he is King Lemuel. You see the word E-L there, by the way, indicating the name of God. Who is this? I don't know. I cannot help but just lean toward the idea this may be Solomon by another name. You know, don't know who he is. Is it uninspired? No. Why? Because God is the author of the book. And whether the words are spoken to the wise men of Solomon's day and he writes them down, or whether those men in Hezekiah's day take the words of Solomon and put them in the Bible, they're in the Bible somewhere in this book of Proverbs. Yes, Pat.
This one says that the author of this of Proverbs was partially written by them, the two men.
Yes, and so the commentary she's got in her Bible mentions these two individuals, these two distinct individuals, but nobody knows who they are.
The later sections.
Yes, the later sections and everything. Of course, a lot of that has to do with the fact the Bible wasn't written when it was supposed to have been written and everything. So, but I don't know who they are. The question is not who wrote these things. You know, does not Paul quote a pagan priest in that sermon on Mars Hill? Yeah. And then he says, and that's true. You remember, certain also of your poets have said, we are his offspring. And then Paul says, and this is true, and if we're the offspring of God, then we're not a temple made of wood and stone and metal. You know, we're in human flesh. We're living people, and if we are his offspring and we are living, what does that say about God? He's a living God. So he quotes a pagan priest. And Paul in Titus talks about the Cretans say all Cretans are gluttons. And I remember once in a logic class we had that statement. A Cretan once said, all Cretans are liars. What's the implication of that? You understand this logic. This is just trying to think about if all Cretans are liars, and a Cretan said that, what does that mean? That all Cretans are not liars. But maybe this guy who said that was one of those not lying Cretans. And so in class, you really try to look smart. Have you considered the fact that he's one of the Cretans who wasn't lying when he said all Cretans are liars, and then that makes him a liar? And so you've got to, you know, that's a philosophical type of thing. I just remember some of those days, and I just remember some of those days with a lot of pain. Okay. All right, let's look at the next slide. Let's look at the nature of Proverbs so that as we read the book of Proverbs, we may not get lost in it. Proverbs has different kinds of proverbs. And I want to just look at them. I'm not going to spend a lot of time looking at them. But in the Hebrew mind, there is parallelism that's used in Hebrew writing over and over again. It's the way the Hebrew mind thought. Make a statement, and then it'll make the same statement using other words. Think about Psalms. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. And then right after that, it talks about the testimonies of the Lord. Parallelism. So you've got a statement that's made, and immediately following that, there's another statement that has the same topic in it. And so, for example, look at chapter 9, verse 1. Look at chapter 9, no, no, not 9, 1. Look at chapter 9, verse 10. Here's what we're talking about. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Look, you see, the word Lord is parallel in that first part of that verse to what in the second part of that verse? The Lord and who? The Holy One. Look at the word wisdom. What's the parallel in the next verse? Understanding. The fear of the Lord and knowledge of the Lord, and the wisdom in verse 10 is parallel to understanding. And so that's really, really characteristic. And it helps you define words. Parallelism helps you define words. It's not the same word, but it's a parallel in the kinds of thoughts that it had. Now, you can subdivide that, and perhaps I should have laid this out making these subpoints. Sometimes it's stated in the positive, and immediately following that, the negative is stated. I've mentioned sometimes in reading the Bible, when I read the Bible, I read a verse right beside that verse. I put that symbol that, I don't know if they use that new math or not. They didn't use it in the old math when I was a kid. Somewhere in between, you had that plus and minus sign. We didn't have that symbol when I was little. We just had plus or minus, you know. Add two takeaways is what we had. Addition and subtraction. But there's a symbol that says plus or minus. And I've done that with the Bible. In a verse, you read a statement, and I put plus or minus for it. Take this verse and flip it over. If this is truth in the positive, what's it true? What about the negative? See if I can illustrate. Blessed is a man who does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly. What is the negative of that? Flip that over. Cursed is the man who what? Who walks in the counsel of the ungodly. And so you've got the positive, and immediately you've got the negative. You've got the negative stated, stated after that. And so look in chapter 20, verse 17. Bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man. Why are they dishonest people? Because they enjoy being dishonest. You know? You ever buy a car from a car salesman? I hope we don't have any car salesmen here. Ever buy a car from a car salesman? And you walk out thinking, boy, he sure looked happy when I walked out. You know, here somebody wants to buy, sell you something, you know they're on commission. You know they're on commission. And so they're not looking at the cheap stuff. And so it says, you know, money is gained by dishonesty is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth will be filled with gravel. I love that. Is that a lot of wisdom with that? You walk out and somebody sweet talked you into something. Understand, God said, all that sweetness in your mouth, I'm going to turn it into gravel. And that's a proverb. It's a wise statement. Let me back up. And I didn't put this in my notes, and I wrote it down to make sure I put it in my notes, and it never made it in my notes. Proverbs are not precepts. What do I mean by that? A precept is a commandment. Proverbs are wise statements. Precepts are always true. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. Is that a proverb? Nope. Precept. God said it. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. What about this one? A soft answer turns away wrath. Is that a precept? Nope. Doesn't always work, does it? A soft answer turns away wrath is a precept. Now, pardon me, it's not a precept. You get in an argument with somebody, and they're about ready to... And you get in an argument with somebody, and they're about ready to slap your nose. You say, now, please don't do that. Guess what's going to happen? You give the soft answer, but you've made him angry. You know, I mean, you understand? So that's a proverb. And proverbs are truth. Judy and I raised our children on this proverb. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart. That's a proverb. Sometimes children have minds of their own. But the fact that that child has a mind of his own and he may turn out wrong doesn't mean that there's not truth in that first one. It's not a precept. It's a proverb. It's a wise statement. And then while I'm chasing that rabbit, Bert Thompson, when he's here, Bert talked about in the way he should go. I've never seen the word he. I remember Bert emphasizing in the way he should go. Is every child different? You got to raise every one of your children different. You know, you can't train up a child to be a basketball player who is 5'2". I don't care if you're as tall as Bert Thompson. You understand what I mean? I don't know if Bert never had boys that size and everything. But you understand? Every child has a way that child should go. And so there is that element. And I think we can see it in the secular physical realm about the way he should go. But the emphasis is in the way that he should go. And I had never underlined the word he in relationship to that verse. And here I go chasing a rabbit, but that is really, really... One other comment. If your children turned out wrong, don't beat yourself to death because of what you know now. When those kids were little, you were doing the very best that you knew how to do. Isn't that amazing? And that has really, really helped me. I mean, do you ever want to raise your kids again? You know? Well, yeah. You know, you understand? If I could just do it again, I would do this. Yeah, why? Because you're 50 years of age and the child is grown. You're 60 years of age. You can see how that young lady, that boy, that girl turned out. If you can do it, just do it again. But you were doing the best you had, but the best you knew at what you know. And that's why young parents, not many of them in here, but young parents, listen to me, you better do a lot of thinking and a lot of praying about how to raise children. Otherwise, you're going to arrive where many of us have arrived thinking, why didn't I just know that principle and everything? Don't wait until you're 60 years of age and look back. Be wise enough to get in the Bible and find out what's important in the Bible and how do you train that child in relationship to that. And that's off topic, but I knew I was going to say it sometime when we studied it. Now there, look in chapter 3, verse 33. I don't think class is supposed to be over yet. Chapter 3, verse 33. This is a double antithetical proverb, and we've already looked at some of them. The first one we looked at was a triple. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked. You see the word curse and the word house, and the word house and home being parallel. The word curse and the word blessed. And the word wicked and the word just. That's a triple. I don't know why I've got that down as a double. But sometimes, a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up strife. That's a double. You've got the antithetical, soft answer, grievous words, turns away strife, stirs up anger. And so it's double in the concept, and maybe that is also a double. But many of them are metaphorical, and I just like this big words. And I want you to think I'm smarter than I am, but I'm going to say they're metaphors. What's a metaphor? Well, it's where you have the word as and like. You remember the pig that had the ring in his nose? It is as what? And all that is. It's a proverb, and it's a proverb that is not positive and negative. You know, it's not parallelism. It's one is like the other. And all the way through the book of Proverbs, you have all of this. And then you've got another one that is a comparison, and this is more than and better than. So when you read the book of Proverbs, just get out of your mind, I'm not reading Paul's narrative. And I'm not reading Paul's logic in relationship to all of this. This is not where I am. All right, need your help in a hurry. I want you to help me find, and I've got the right Bible with me. I want you to help me find, and we got about 3 minutes according to my watch. Got 4 minutes according to the digital watch. Look at how many times you see the word my son or my child. Look in chapter 1. You see in chapter 1 the word my son at all? Now shout out the verse. Verse 8, see it again. 15, see it again. Verse 10. All right, Solomon, this is the wisdom, Proverbs of Solomon. Who's he talking to? In this first chapter, he keeps saying, my son, my son, my son. What about in chapter 2? Do you see my son in there anywhere? Verse 1. What about chapter 3? Verse 1, I see it two more times in chapter 3. Your Bible's in paragraph, that really helps. Where you see it again? Chapter 11 and verse 21. What about chapter 4? Always look in verse 1 when you're looking for this. It's my children. Verse 10 is my son. One other time, you see it in chapter 4, anywhere else? Yeah. That's verse 20. What about chapter 5? My son, verse 7, my children, verse 20, my son. Chapter 6, where is it? 1, verse 3, verse 20, chapter 7, verse 1, verse 24, my son, my children. Chapter 8, verse 32. Solomon, who are you talking to? Well, if you had 700 wives, 300 wives, which do you have? I've lost that number. 300 wives, 700 concubines. A little kid, one child read that, had 300 wives, 700 porcupines. But think of the number of children that he had. Wisest man that ever lived. Wrote a book. And a part of the intent of that book was to talk to his son. Isn't that amazing? Sort of changes it, doesn't it? He's trying to make his son wise. And so when he says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Is that important? Yes, my son, it is. You may not know the word homily at all. Homiletics is the study of how to outline sermons. I made an F. Homiletics is a sermon. When I taught the teens 3 or 4 years ago, I said, and I talked about this, what does your mother say just as you leave the house? Do your parents do that? I said to my kids, remember who you are and what you are. That's the last thing I said to them when they left the house. You know, you're a Christian and you're a Jenkins, and don't you mess up either of those names. Remember who you are and what you are. When I taught the teens, I said, I explained the word homily, and I said, here's you a new word, amomily. Amomily. Angie, when the kids left, did you have a momily you gave to them? Are there momilies? I remember one that one of the teens came up, fun's not fun unless fun. You ever heard of that momily? Mm-hmm. Unless fun is for everyone. Isn't that amazing? And that's a momily. It's not in the book of Proverbs, but it is exactly what you did with your children, what you wanted, or what you would do with your children if you had it to do over, had to do over again. And so Solomon is trying to just not show his wisdom. Now, when he gets through the first 9 chapters, he stops doing it. Until you get to chapter 31, and whoever Lemuel is, he said, this, the words of King Lemuel, taught to him by mother, and she says, listen, my son. Wonder where Solomon learned about mommalies. The words, the description of a virtuous woman. If Lemuel is really Solomon, guess who writes Proverbs 31? Bathsheba. Is that the antithetical picture of Mary, the mother of Jesus? Isn't that amazing? All right, that's enough for today. All right, I've got a quarter till. Let's end our class then. Thank you very much. Now, we head in a different direction next time. We're going to get on some of these topics and go through and look. Just thought you needed the introduction to the book.